2021 at Universal Studios at Universal Orlando Resort.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Smart Clock Podcast is back once again. It doesn't bother me. I'm sure it bothers a lot of the 15-year-old marks on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, how about a Y2J telling you to shut the hell up?
34 Boulevard Road. I don't know where I am. I'm so lost and afraid and alone. You can see Vince's greasy little fingerprints all over this segment.
This has turned into nothing more than a handicap match!
I don't respect you, Dexter, and I intend to beat you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to part two of Week in the Universe, where we discuss the blue brand, loosely. I'm your host, Amir Azzaneni, and joining me, as always, is Steve Neal.
Yes, let's get into the ever-exciting SmackDown, where we said there's just absolutely no way Road Dogg could fuck it up with a roster this stacked.
Yes, last week's SmackDown was great, so we're thinking, oh, surely SmackDown going forward is going to be good. No. No. Also, before we run into it, who's your pick for the new host? Do you believe that Taylor should replace Dexter Critchman? There's a lot of chatter now.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because Dexter's like the kicked puppy of the Smart Plug Galaxy, where you just can't help but pity him. And I don't want to say anything bad about Dexter because, you know, he's just, well, look at him. You don't need to, really. It speaks for itself. Mate. So, but Taylor is certainly made a very good impression, a good debut. So, I'm open to all of it. We don't need to dispense with Dexter necessarily, but Dexter, mate, fucking gauntlet is thrown down. Step your shit up. Challenge is there, mate. Opportunity is there.
There you go. You've heard it from Steve Neal. And the great thing is, of course, Steve Neal is assured of his position as premier co-host.
Oh, so, I fear no one.
You don't really have to worry when you bring the quality that you do every week. Nick Payne fancies himself as a contender, but you know, Kyle's just happy to be here. Kyle's our Sean Mooney. He's the smile of the smart plug. But yeah. Yeah, Dexter, you're in fucking trouble, mate. But the ranks are getting swollen as we speak. However, it is time for SmackDown, sir. Are you ready to discuss this thing?
Yes, let's tickle the testicles of Road Dogg's latest creation. Come on
and fight back. Harper. Rowan. Bludgeon Brothers.
I will have the opportunity to put to sleep your beloved Daniel Bryan.
You will never be as good as AJ Styles.
So, last week we had a really good SmackDown show, and I loved SmackDown last week. I really popped super hard for it as the Mr. Negativity and, you know, Negative Nancy as I am, and I just thought, this week quite interesting, quite keen to see what happens. Stay up live as per usual. No! Is basically what I got in response to this. Big Cass beat up a midget. I bet you love this segment. I bet you lost your mind over the Daniel Bryan midget.
The Daniel Bryan midget, you know what? I was like, okay, this is old school. This is classic WWF. We've not seen a midget dressed up as an enemy, as a foe in a while. I'm okay with that. But Big Cass is... He literally gave like a 10-minute promo about the fact that he's tall and Daniel Bryan is short. It's fucking garbage. He is garbage. His delivery is terrible. He doesn't know whether he's comedy or not. His facial expressions are fucking ridiculous. He doesn't know what's going on with his hands or with his eyes. He's just not very good. He's just not very good. He's got all the tools because he's tall and ripped, and the WWE loves someone who's tall and ripped, but... He needs to have an absolute barn burner of a match with Daniel Bryan to get me slightly intrigued by his character.
I I must admit, I really enjoyed Big Cass's promo last week with the suit when he interrupted Miz. I'm the only person who really liked it, but I thought it was good. I did. I think by Big Cass standards, especially, I thought it was quite good. This was not good. I really was excited when he came out. I thought, excellent. More, you know, just keep going, get him involved in these things, and eventually you'll have, you know, a breakthrough moment. I thought, you know, we're turning the corner slowly but surely with Cass in terms of a character. This is like taking 20 steps back. First of all, the Carney midget shit is too old school for me at this point. That is a 90s WWF playbook, textbook stuff from WWF. No, poor. Don't recycle shit like that. Also, in the modern age, come on. You're bringing out a dwarf in the modern age dressed as somebody else. And, you know, what is this, like Jackass 1.0? Just poor, poor, boring, not funny. And, you know, somebody of great charisma and excitement like the New Day wouldn't be able to make this segment really much. So someone like Big Cass is certainly not going to go out there and deliver. And, you know, Daniel Bryan wasn't on this show. Don't know if that was family or anything. Chest infection, my fat ass. I mean, but I mean, come on, it's Daniel Bryan. The geezer was walking around with a broken neck and fucking head seizures and didn't give a shit, really. Like, I just feel like this segment just derails some good work that's been done. And if Road Dogg is responsible, let's put a midget out there. That'll be great. Fuck off. Lazy. Boring, and Big Cass doesn't have enough personality to pull this off, and I'm actually disappointed for him in a way, because I feel like, you know, keep it simple with someone like Big Cass. Keep it simple. What have you got? A big guy who can deliver a monstrous big boot. He's fairly limited in the ring. He's not great on the mic, so don't have him talk. You've got so many great mic workers. Why can't he just be the Miz's new hitman, and but that be it? No real sort of, you know, just have him as like, I don't know, just like I say, like a hitman, like a bodyguard. Why can't he just stand there looking menacing and not saying too much and playing to his strengths, which is giving someone a good fucking kicking? You know, why does he have to have ludicrous amounts? There's enough guys on this roster. We've got people who are charismatic or flamboyant. We've got Shinsuke Nakamura. We've got Joe, who's a world-class mind worker. We've got The Miz, who's the perfect all-encompassing wrestler. You've got people like Daniel Bryan, who are the crowd favorites. And you've got The New Day and The Bar and The Usos, these larger-than-life characters. You don't need yet another one. I just feel like, yeah, it's just... Road Dogg seems to have this obsession with bringing back to life late 90s WWF. But it's a new fucking era, and people aren't interested in that stuff. And, you know...
You don't have like the strength of that... characters either. Like, no, if you've got, like, DX Triple H, or you've got Nation of Domination Rock coming out there doing stuff with midgets, that's one thing. Big Cass is not either of those two guys. No. He's, you know, he's not Val Venus even, so...
Know your strengths and stay in your lane. As you know, stay in your lane is kind of like the modern era, kind of, you know your role sort of thing, isn't it? And someone like Big Cass, he doesn't offer, you know, 5-star or sky. I did like his line when he said, this isn't going to be a 5-star match, it's going to be a 5-second match. That was great. He should have just come out, said
but
that.
But it's his facial expression. Again. Yeah. The delivery of it is terrible.
Well, I do have a theory, because I think he looks suspiciously like... What I get the impression is somebody grabbed hold of WWE Hall of Famer Edge and stuck him in one of them bio tanks and tried to make him into some sort of monstrous Leviathan, but he ended up coming out as one of Krieger's creations from Archer, because he just looks like a maladjusted but much larger, you know, mangled Edge. He does look like Giant Edge for me, but with some sort of Down syndrome. I mean, I don't know. I'm really disappointed, because last week I was excited, but, you know, I won't dwell on it forever. But Big Cass, you took one step forward and now you've taken 10 steps back again. So, and without actually having Daniel Bryan out there, having a brawl with him, disappointing. I would have rather seen Daniel Bryan run down to the ring and start, you know, just basically
needed a payoff.
Well, yeah, especially as their match is this Sunday. So that's it. The payoff, the go-home moment to this rivalry, this very short rivalry, might I add, is Big Cass booting a midget. And then we see the Daniel Bryan promo as well backstage from Saudi Arabia, where he simply doesn't even mention Big Cass. He just mentions the fact he couldn't get Braun Strowman over the top rope. I was like, okay, so that didn't help either. I mean, I'm sure that's not Daniel's fault. Whoever spliced that in is an idiot. They shouldn't have bothered. But
just the thing, yeah, of, I mean, yeah, Daniel Bryan made an appearance.
Yeah, that was the other problem with this show. They were still banging on about GRR. Fuck off. You've already had it. Leave it there and fucking get on with what's important. Building to your actual product. But no, they were just banging on about it. So AJ Styles still isn't wearing a cup. So
yeah.
At what point do you learn that this guy is punching you in the bollocks repeatedly? Cover yourself. I thought AJ did a good promo. I actually think AJ Styles is really underrated on the mic. Then Samoa Joe came out and I literally jizzed everywhere because I was so bored until this point. And then Joe comes out, I'm like, oh my God, we're going to get Joe and Styles. I was freaking the fuck out and thinking, TNA from 10 years ago all over again. I can't fucking wait. Give me more Lethal Lockdown. And then all of a sudden, Nakamura's there and he's low-blowed AJ and yeah, Kin Sasha. And for all the fun and pomp, this was a right tease, and this was the problem with SmackDown. You thought, this could be amazing, this could be great. Nah, you're all right. They're just very atypical. I get this rivalry. I get it. I get that you're trying to get over the fact that Nakamura is a twat, and all he does is keep low-blowing. Oh, for fuck's sake, just get in the ring and fight like a man. But it has to have more depth than, look at me, I'm swinging my arm in your testicular region every week. At what point do we say that the champion has more brains and actually fucking realises what's going on? Wear a cup!
Well, it's not even like he's not blocked it, he's not reversed it, he's not dodged it. He's just literally just stood there and been punched in the balls every week since WrestleMania, sometimes twice a week. Like, this whole... I just haven't... I'm just not really... I'm really enjoying Nakamura as a heel. I wish we'd see more of him on this show, to be honest. But
I'd rather
I'm just
have
a
him
bit
doing the heel promo. He should have been out there doing a promo and Styles should have jumped him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's just... It feels a bit... I'm a bit bored of it. It's just been too repetitive now because they've literally just found everyone popped for the low blow. And so, right, do that every single week without fail for 6 weeks. No, please don't. Please do better than that. I think that, you know, that's the problem. I, again, popped hard for Samoa Joe, delivers on the mic as always. There's something wrong with the fact that we're now theoretically 2 months into this Nakamura AJ Styles feud. And within 2 minutes, I care far more about a potential Samoa Joe AJ Styles feud. And that instantly feels far more WWE marquee to me, even though it's still two indie darlings. That's there's an issue there somewhere in this feud between Styles and Nakamura that has made it to me a little underwhelming. And, you know, I'm not laying that any individual's door necessarily, but I'm far more excited about the prospect of Joe Styles than I am Styles Nakamura, even though, same with Styles Nakamura, I've seen it before outside of the WWE, and the likelihood is it won't recapture the same level of quality in the WWE as it did outside. But I've got far more faith in those two to put on a great WWE match than I do in Styles Nakamura. I've just never really caught fire with the Styles Nakamura rivalry.
They've dropped the ball, is what they've done. They've taken what is arguably one of the biggest and most exciting clashes in independent and Japanese wrestling history, like it was in NJPW Wrestle Kingdom, which, you know, let's be honest, you know what? For all the fucking bullshit and chatter about NJPW, go and watch that shit if you don't like WWE and all that kind of crap. Yes, Nick Payne, I'm still looking at you. The reality is that, do you know what? Whether you like it or not, NJPW did this rivalry so much better. So, 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 so much better. And, you know, they're trying, and it's not bad at all by any means.
No, no, no.
It's lackluster. And that's the problem here. When it's AJ Styles, nothing should be lackluster. It should be marquee. It should be balls-to-the-wall excitement. And do you know what? Might be time to just after this match get him out of the fucking way and get Joe in there and have Joe Styles just rampage for the rest of the year, because that's where the money is as far as I'm concerned right now. I'm looking at this current build and this current roster after Superstar Shakeup, and I'm thinking Styles and Joe, should be up front. Then you've got The Miz as well. I think The Miz and Daniel Bryan, I think those are your two marquee builds. Those are the two that need to be built towards SummerSlam. And then hopefully from that point on, you know, with that and the amount of creative you can have, and let's be honest as well, the fact that you've got in both of those rivalries, you know, four very capable and world-class talents in different factors, like for instance Joe being, you know, the all-encompassing, Styles being all-encompassing but being more stronger at wrestling, and then you've got obviously The Miz, who isn't as strong a wrestler but an incredible persona, and then someone like Daniel Bryan, who is the quintessential athlete. You know, there is so much scope there, but right now they're fanning around with very cheap rivalries that nobody cares about, and the reality is GRR, you know, the Greatest Royal Rumble, did more harm than good, because what it did is completely derailed any interest in Backlash. So we are waiting until I should not be at a point where I'm thinking, can we get this pay-per-view out of the way so I can actually enjoy some story, because that's what it is right now. Get fucking Backlash out of the way. I've never been less interested in a post-WrestleMania pay-per-view. And, you know, let's be honest, if you go back and watch late 90s to early noughties, you know, the backlashes that you used to get after WrestleMania, like the Austin Rock ones, and then, you know, the fallouts from WrestleMania with some of the great matches they had, you know, Eddie Guerrero and Angle and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, Triple H was one. You know, we, you know, even, you know, I remember fucking having Hulk Hogan versus Triple H at Backlash, and that was still far infinitely more interesting as a story than this shite. It's disappointing. It's really disappointing. This should be the big marquee event. And ironically enough, I believe, in a couple of weeks, they're in the United Kingdom, which is normally where they fucking really kick into gear. I mean, hopefully, post-Backlash, you might get something quite decent. But, you know, the United Kingdom shows are always touted as kind of like Raw after Mania sort of style crowds, especially the Raw crowd. They're pretty raucous. I've been to the last few, and they've always been very exciting, even if the product hasn't been that great. But right now, I just kind of, I don't know, I despair with the product. The main event, I really sort of perked up a little bit when I saw that the women were going to be in the main event, the six women tag team match. You know, the powers that be that are the Iconics and Carmella versus Charlotte, Asuka and Becky Lynch, who are basically my three favorite women's wrestlers in the last 20 years, I'd have to be honest. I love these three. They are incredible. They had a little backstage promo and a build up to it. I thought Becky seems to have gone down the Dean Ambrose route of going a bit mental. But it works for her, actually. It really does. She's got the character. And
fits where she is in her career.
It does, it does.
She's losing all the time. And, you know, she does need to, like, I like the idea of, like, I need to just buck my ideas up. This is ridiculous. How am I losing? I like that. It's good.
Yeah, I do like that. There's a slight paranoia there, a slight neuroses, but it works for Becky Lynch. And she's so adorable and so over with younger fans and, you know, uber marks that it works for her. So she's still got plenty of scope and potential. But this match fucking infuriated me. Not because it was necessarily terrible, because this match, there were two things I took away from this match. One is that Charlotte Flair is preeminently the best wrestler all around in WWE for my money. I think she's number one. It's between her. I mean, in women's terms, I don't think it's even fucking questionable.
No, it's not close.
Overall, as a product, I think that it's her and Styles. They're right there with each other. And I just utterly am in love with Charlotte Flair from watching this match. This, you know, because I thought this match was, I didn't think it was a stinker, but it wasn't fantastic. But the one thing I will say is that Charlotte Flair, whenever she interacted with this match, even the crowd were going wild, and the crowd was sitting on her hands for the majority of this. The other thing I take away from this is that the Iconics and Carmella are so woefully behind the other three in terms of how they present themselves, how they wrestle in ring, and the psychology in ring. And I despair with it, because I do think Carmella has a lot of potential. I do get excited by the character of Carmella, but in ring, she is woefully, woefully subpar. Like, I can't even begin to explain the disparity between her and even a Becky Lynch, never mind a Charlotte. when she came in and threw that kick and just almost fell over, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, come on. You know, like, she, there was one glimmer where I thought, oh, she did the Trish Stratus headstand into the Hurricane Run. Yeah. And I thought, nice, nice. There you go. There's a bit more potential. Come on. Follows up with nothing else. Between the three of them, I think they did three wrestling moves and the rest was screaming and headlocks. And they didn't portray their characters very well either. I thought the Iconics, they are really starting to get shown up on this roster. You know, it might be smart to move them down the card a bit until they can fucking find themselves a nice little niche. Because right now they are really drowning when it comes to in-ring. Because, you know, yeah, that's all very well and good. Fantastic. You can do the whole, you know, where bitches kind of thing, which I don't fucking like either. But it does have some potential or some scope if it's done correctly. But then you are going to have to get in the fucking ring. You are going to have to wrestle. You know, for all these people who say, oh, if you want to go and watch wrestling, you don't watch WWE, you watch someone else. Well, the reality is it's still the World Wrestling Entertainment. And if you can't wrestle at all, or you cannot at least portray a character or convey it in the ring, you're going to be in big trouble in the long term. And for me, I felt like the Iconics and Carmella were woeful in this match. And literally, if it wasn't for Charlotte, to be honest, I think the crowd would have just completely sat on their hands for the whole match. Luckily, Charlotte is so incredible and so special. And it was also nice to see Asuka get the win. I think that's quite smart because a lot of people are starting to whinge about Asuka being a bit weaker and thinking, oh, she's fucking been, you know, booked into the ground now. It's like, well, no, to be fairly, you know, I think that's a gross overreaction. You know, she's had a couple of losses. I mean, the last one, it wasn't even her that got pinned. So it's not like she sort of loses. I get the argument, but the reality is that, you know, she's lost her streak now. So let's just see her more as
a member of the roster, realistic, rather than a superhero.
We're still acting as if she's undefeated, which really irritates the bejesus out of me, because it's just like, well, she's not. So, you know, all these people whinge, didn't they? Oh, fucking Asuka, fuck's sake, when's she going to lose? So she loses in what is one of the great all-time WrestleMania matches, as far as I'm concerned. And then people are whinging that she's losing now. Like, oh, for fuck's sake, why is she losing? It's like, you're the same people who wanted her to lose. What, so she only was allowed to lose once? Now she should just go on another 500-plus day streak? Come on, get a grip of the product. That's not how it works, especially on the main roster. And yeah, just, I don't know, just this match left me feeling a little bit disappointed, but also happy, because I sort of came away thinking Charlotte is everything I've always thought she was. And I love Becky and Asuka, they're very entertaining, but it also reminded me that the other three women for me have not, you know, they're not evolving this product at all. I feel like they're either keeping it in second gear or they're taking it back slightly. So yeah, overall a little bit meh from this main event.
Yeah, I thought it was, it wasn't a particularly great match. As you say, Charlotte just looks head and shoulders above everyone at this point in time. You know, she's got the charisma, she's got a presence about her, she's got the ability, you know, she's bumping and selling her ass off for people who are nowhere near at her level, because she is that true professional and she's trying to help, you know, not that she's part of an older generation, but she's trying to help people who are coming through, who are coming up, and she's trying to make everyone look good. She's very respectful. So, as you say, the fans were just completely into her, absolutely far and away ahead of anyone and everyone else. She is marquee. The moonsault and stuff like that. She's just responsible for a lot of great spots. I thought the finish was great, actually. Like, was it Billy Kay, maybe, who ate it? Or, you know, it's Peyton Royce. With the tap out, roll up into the Asuka lock. That was a lovely, that was a really good spot. But the thing is, we know Peyton Royce can wrestle. We know she's not a terrible wrestler. She's an okay in-ring worker from what we've seen in NXT. Billy Kay, we've not seen anywhere near as much of. What this reminds me of is Absolution and the Riot Squad coming up, when they've had a lot more exposure and a lot more opportunities on NXT than either of the other two, but they don't look particularly any more prepared or any more ready than what they were. And they've been given a lot more exposure, a lot more time on the mic, a lot more segments, interview segments with Renee, and a lot more kind of ability to both get in the ring than we saw from Absolution or Riot Squad when they debuted. Because it was basically all about Ruby Riot and Paige for those teams. I think that the Iconics' right place is as just goons for Carmella. I'm okay with that. but I don't want to see them in tag matches week in, week out, unless they do a tag division. I want to see them literally just running in, doing kind of stupid distraction stuff, doing stupid shtick, and work their ass off to improve. I do think they've got potential as a duo. I don't think they've got potential separately at all. I think it's all about the way they bounce off each other. And that's a worry for me, I think, for both of them in terms of longevity in the company. Carmella put out a tweet maybe last week responding to someone who said she's garbage in the ring and said, I haven't wrestled a singles match on pay-per-view since 2016. So, you know, when you now see me in a singles match, you're going to be very surprised because I've been working very hard to improve. And Charlotte backed her up and said, you know, she's condescending, she's an idiot, but she's not a bad wrestler. Okay, say I'm not going to judge you on the tag matches and stuff and the fatal five ways and things that we've been seeing you in for the last year, 18 months. You need to have a fucking barn burner. And there's no excuse not to when you're up with Charlotte, because Charlotte can elevate anyone. She's a fantastic talent. If you want to have a good match, she's the person to go to in that division. So if it's not a good match, if she doesn't perform well, then for me, it's kind of she's failed the acid test. I think she's going to go over. I think the Iconics will produce some carny bullshit and she'll have a spawny heel win. And I'm okay with her keeping the title for a little while. But I think this is a real test. If she doesn't particularly perform in this match and doesn't get a good reaction from her wrestling ability in this match, I think her title run will be short-lived. This, to me, is creative and backstage saying, okay, we'll show us how good you are. And if it turns out you're not that good, we'll have the title off you next month. We'll have it off you at Money in the Bank. I'd quite like her to lose to a Money in the Bank winner, actually. I'd quite like a very quick Money in the Bank cash in into her, like drop the title that way. I think that would be very cool. But yeah, I didn't particularly care about this match. I love the fact they're in the main event. Charlotte was great. It was a good ending, a couple of good spots. But I just don't... Another six women tag to main event a show, exactly the same as Raw did last week. And it's repetitive, and yet again, it's SmackDown following the Raw template. And it's just not working. You've got four of the top characters and three of the top wrestlers in the women's division. Carmella, Asuka, Charlotte, and Becky. You've got Naomi factored in there as well, who wasn't on the show. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing in that division? Charlotte, Carmella, that's fine. I've got no problem with that feud. You brought the Iconics in. You want to give them a decent spot, give them a decent introduction. That's fine as well. But that doesn't mean that Asuka and Becky can't be doing anything and Naomi can't be doing anything. And that's what frustrates me about the women's division. This was a show in which the tag division was an irrelevance. The women's division was just meh. The world title bored me. We've still had no Sanity. We still have no Andrade, Cien Almas, and Zelina Vega. It's not. There's so much talent around, and they are using so little of it. You know, and that's what it's very frustrating.
Yeah, we had, you know, Sheamus versus Xavier Woods, which was probably the best match of the night, which is...
not saying anything, poor. Is it really?
No, exactly. That's a poor indicator of what's going on here. You know, there was no Usos. There was no tag team champions, the Bludgeon Brothers. You know, there's no Almas. There's no Sanity. There was no AJ Styles match. You know, there was no Samoa Joe match. There was no Daniel Bryan full start. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, what you're basically saying is, yeah, we've got more talent than Raw. Oh, you're not going to get to see most of it, though. Okay, that's great. Like, I don't have a problem with, for instance, Xavier Woods and Sheamus having a match because, you know, can't just be the marquee guys out there all the time. But you could have padded that very nicely by maybe having the Usos wrestle. You know, you got Shelton Benjamin and Jeff Hardy.
The tag match, Shelton and...
It was a tag match. I don't care. The US title match. The US title run, right? Jeff Hardy, great in-ring talent, you know, legend for what he is. Shelton Benjamin, world-class wrestler. Randy Orton, you know, legend for what that is. But yeah,
this was just, it was a very,
I mean, you had the Miz,
it was match,
just, I just felt like, hey, here's the Miz, everybody else is standing around him trying desperately to look as good as him.
Yeah, the Miz TV segment wasn't great, other than the Miz. The Miz was fantastic.
Orton is not.
It's just you
Orton
had the three people that came out are an absolute black hole for charisma. Like whatever the Miz was doing, it's like Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, and Shelton Benjamin are just going to suck it down. Like no,
perfect way to describe it.
It was just, it was really poor, and the Miz is desperately needed in the mid card. You know. At the moment, because that's what he's got to deal with, and he's got to elevate that. It's a massive, it's probably the biggest challenge of the Miz's career to elevate that mid card to something interesting and intriguing. I don't think he can do it alone. You know, I do think they need to maybe give Randy Orton a break
in there.
Yeah, and get someone like a Rusev in there. You know,
teasing a Rusev English breakup as well. Lana looking so hot in the.
And was she doing her accent? She seemed halfway between being Russian and being American, wasn't it?
I've just
forgotten how to do it.
Broken with it. Yeah, I noticed that. They got her to... she did both, didn't she, at the Hall of Fame thing as well. And I was just like, what's going on here?
Yeah, they seem to... It's like, they've had her off TV for a long time. She needs to be repackaged. I think they're moving completely away from the idea of her being a wrestler now. They're going to move her back to being a manager. It's kind of what they were looking to do maybe with the Tamina angle, but obviously Tamina's been injured in a way. How has it taken them this long to think, we could put her back with Rusev? Like, it's ridiculous. There's no reason why she couldn't have been part of Rusev Day and just accompanying him to the ring and letting Aiden English do all the work and her just being there and at least getting on TV and wearing hot Rusev Day merch. It's baffling to me. And now, as you say, kind of the teasing that breakup.
Why can't you just have all three? I don't get it.
Because I think Rusev will survive it because we know that Rusev and Lana, you know, guarantees a certain level of quality in, on the mic and in the ring. Yeah. And
English
they'll probably
is
be all right.
If he loses,
I worry for English. Yeah. Where are you going to put him? Because he is a tag team guy, isn't he, really? You know, he came in as vaudevillians and all that. So
villains.
Where are you going to put him? You going to put him with Shelton Benjamin? American Alpha 3.0. Fuck it.
Jesus Christ. The disparity in skin color is pretty wild.
It really is, isn't it?
Ebony and Ivory.
To the extreme. Ebony and... What the fuck is that? Why are you so transparent?
Ebony and what the fuck is that?
It's just... But the fact that Lana randomly appearing to talk to her husband was one of the more... was arguably the most intriguing segment on SmackDown is...
Yeah.
Laughable. It sums up what the show is at this moment in time. I love Lana and as a character, and you know, a lot of love for Rusev Day, but this shouldn't be one of the talking points of the show. But for me, the show was just so meh.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything else you want to run down?
I can't think of anything else that happened, to be quite honest with you. Oh, Paige has said that Absolution's dead. That happened.
Oh, yeah, Mandy Rose.
Wow. Yeah. Do you know what? I don't know that you're not going to like this, and I don't give a fuck, but I'm quite liking Paige as a GM on the basis that she seems to be doing, when she's actually on TV, awkward British
humor. That's because I've barely seen her.
It was... So she did it with Shane the other week, where she sort of come back in, she was like, oh, this is awkward, when Shane was dancing and that. She did it where they just kept the camera on that 5 seconds too long on the three of them, where it just starts to become a little bit awkward, where she's just told them that Absolution's dead, and then that she's sort of just standing there like, just brushing down her top and like, oh, I'm far too British for this. This is far too uncomfortable. I love that. That's like Ricky Gervais, The Office style of humour, like Alan Partridge. Very British comedy, and I fucking loved it. And I don't know if it's intentional or whether it's like just her natural personality or shit camera work. I don't know, but I enjoyed it. I did have a little giggle from it.
I haven't seen anything I dislike. To be honest, I've barely seen her. And I think I fast forward over her bits anyway, just that purely by accident because the shoe horned in. So she's not prominent like Kurt Angle in any way. So I find her completely inoffensive. No, that's not a bad thing. I mean, I'd much rather see her than Shane still. I fucking hate Shane, so, you know.
Well, apparently Shane's taking a bit of a break, isn't? Didn't she say something like that at the start of the show before she announced
something
the no
like
DQ?
That, yeah.
Shane's going to be off
for
a bit.
I'm curious as to what they're going to do with Absolution as a pair. So,
I
really like Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I think they've got a lot of potential, so I'm hoping
it's Mandy versus Becky, isn't it, next week that was announced? And I'm quite looking forward to that. Let's see. You know, yes. Becky's a great worker to go in. She's probably going to job out. That's what Becky does.
Yeah, again.
She's a great worker to go in and be able to say, actually, who, you know, what level of talent are we dealing with here in ring? And I want to see more of Mandy and Sonya get on the mic, because we've not seen that yet, really. So let's get a bit of mic time for them too as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add, but I thought this was one and a half.
Yeah, I could have fallen asleep 83 times through this.
I did fall asleep, and then I woke up and did the podcast with Taylor, which was infinitely more exciting. So, yeah. Not impressed. My God, please bring Jinder back.
Yeah, if you have Jinder the Miz interacting in the mid-card of SmackDown, it would be infinitely more entertaining than Randy Orton and anyone, really.
Yeah, this show was very much the Randy Orton of SmackDowns.
It was, yes. Yeah, yeah. Nothing completely wrong with it, but just boring.
Yeah, very boring. At Tempura _Kid has SmackDown thoughts. Very flat start to the show. Paige is painful to listen to. I wish they'd do something with her. Fair enough, she had her segment with Absolution and told them Absolution is dead, but Paige has been reduced to a backstage match announcer. It's cringy to watch.
She's a fucking GM. What did you expect her to do? She can't fucking wrestle. She expected to come out and start whacking figure fours on people?
She can whack a figure four on me.
Yeah, she could actually. Scissors! Scissor my timbers!
Scissor me timbers! Great episode of South Park, that is. AJ Styles and Nakamura is now a DQ match. Great, more testicle lashings for AJ. Could have been a last man standing match or a cage match, but no, just a no DQ match. That's been announced backstage by a manager who shows no charisma at this time. Is she even a heel anymore? Because I can't tell.
I don't think so, but I think I do agree that the no DQ stipulation, although it's, you know, it's just felt a bit predictable and a bit unnecessary. I don't know if they're going to wait until... I don't know how long they're going to keep it going for, but I thought a cage match would have been great.
I assume we're going to get 20 minutes of low blows, and that's it.
Just like, each of them hitting each other in the
balls.
I'll
actually be annoyed if he doesn't just constantly just keep trying to punch him in the knackers and he's just running away, like, get away from my balls. Like, that would be infinitely more entertaining and actually figure up with the storyline that they've told us, which is Nakamura likes balls.
That literally is the story that we've been told, though.
Yeah.
Nakamura likes balls. Yeah.
He likes obscene underground Japanese rap, and he likes punching people in the knackers.
Yeah.
Miz TV was flat and pretty pointless, to be honest. That's what happens when you bring Randy Orton out, I'm afraid. The match that followed had no build to it. That they should have scrapped Miz TV, cut the bullshit, and gone straight to the match. Fair play.
Just cut the match.
Yeah, just have Miz TV. Just have the Miz stand there and tell us what he doesn't like about current WWE for about 10 minutes, and then just cut to commercial. Happy days. Mm. Is Lana losing her Russian accent? Possibly. Maybe she's just got fed up with... Maybe she's not on TV enough to remember that she's Russian.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe she's forgotten how to do it, because there were little, like, elements of her speech. It was like, okay, she's trying to do the accent again, but then it sort of fades... It was, yeah, it did sound weird, but they did it with Kofi Kingston and it was fine, so fuck it.
Look out. Big Cass is wicked. I really liked his promo. I imagined he would be shit on the mic because he was always team with Enzo, that was a great talker. Bit rapey, but still a good talker. Cass is great to watch, allegedly. Cass is great to watch. He's a good talker, and I love watching midgets get beaten up. There should be more midget beatings in WWE. I'd love it if that midget comes back next week with all his mates and an army of hornswoggles dressed as Daniel Bryan, beat the crap out of him, and have to have security come and chase all those wee little bastards out of the arena.
Oh, I appreciate the humour of an army of midgets destroying Big Cass, but I refuse to. I disagree. I respectfully disagree that Big Cass is good to watch.
I'm enjoying the AJ Nakamura feud, mainly because of Nakamura. His characterisms and mannerisms in the ring are fascinating. He's playing a really good heel at the moment. All these low blows. AJ needs to wear an iron jockstrap or a steel cup or even a medieval chastity belt so Nakamura breaks his hand and we can all laugh at him failing.
Yeah, that's true.
Has Cesaro become a black market pancake salesman? Love the distraction by opening the jacket and offering pancakes to Xavier Woods. I will say one thing. Cesaro's little bit on the outside was amazing. You know, when he countered, Big E caught him, didn't he? Flat as he fell out. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It was a really cool moment. And then he counters it, pushes him in the ring. And then he manages to avoid Kofi and then starts styling and profiling on the other side before getting taken out. I was like, that is really good heel work. Because he's like, yeah, I'm so fucking good. And so everyone's just like, fuck you, bitch. And drop kicks him in the head. I thought, that's well good. I really enjoyed that. That was actually quite a lot of SmackDown.
Cesaro is great. So the bar are fantastic. They're so underrated.
The bar. The bar so are, underrated. For me, the most underrated tag team in the last 10 years. I think they're easily one of the top comedy slash heel working tag teams I've ever seen, especially
they switch
in this modern
between
era.
The
I think
two.
They're amazing. Yeah.
They're so good at switching from being intense and vicious and aggressive to fucking hilarious. And
yeah.
Like, you know, get you a girl that can do both and all that. Get you a tag team that can do both. But if you put them in with the Bludgeon Brothers and they have to be intense and aggressive and vicious, you know they can sell that. That's what's great about the bar. They can do the comedy stuff with New Day, the vicious stuff with Bludgeon Brothers or Sanity or whoever. Oh, they're so versatile. They're just good for all occasions, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I have nothing but great things to say about the bar. I think they're incredible. Hardly any women's stuff on this show. Six women tag match, very predictable. Charlotte had the last laugh. Come backlash, I think she gets the title back. I hope so anyway, as I can't stand Seagull squawking Carmella. She needs to go back to the beach or a crappy old pier somewhere where she can steal people's chips and shit on the homeless. Wonderful line.
I've got a nemesis awesome. At the moment, a Seagull nemesis.
Have you?
At my work, awesome. Yeah, the little fucker. So as I go outside, I'm trying to eat lunch outside when the weather's nice, you know, get a bit of fresh air, a bit of sunshine on my bones. Not happening very often. But it just keeps coming and landing right by my feet and then just running at me to try and steal my sandwich while I'm reading my book. So I smacked the fucker in the beak with my book the other day as it ran at me. I'm like, fuck you! Backhand with the spine of my
great.
Book.
Great, now I'm going to have to put up with fucking RSPCA shit, aren't I?
Fuck you,
wonderful.
Peter, you little shit.
It's fuck just, you, Pete Dunne sitting there. What did I do?
It was just, yeah, fuck Seagulls, man. They're rats, absolute rats of the sky. And I like Carmella, and she's not a ring rat. But I know the squawking thing is part of a heel annoying character, but it is so off-putting.
It's overdone. There's too much of it.
So it is off-putting.
Yeah, it's funny if it's done like on the odd occasion, like when Billy Kay sort of ran away from Asuka in Fear. But if you're doing it every time someone touches you, you then cease to be entertaining. You become incredibly fucking irritating.
And it's
not
screaming
for the right reasons.
For everything. And it's always in that pitch. There's never anything where she just stands up and just gets, you know, her voice goes low and she's just gesticulating at the ref or pointing at him and getting angry that way. It has to be at that decibel level. And
she could do with watching old school Ivory when Ivory was in.
Yeah.
Especially when she was in Right to Censor and that. She could learn a thing or two from watching someone like that. You know, I get the impression that some of these women actually, in general, could do with going through the network and watching some of the older mannerisms of the women. And they were doing that in the face of incredible difficulties. And frankly, they were given, 2 minutes of Raw at best? So, you know, there's no excuses for it in this.
3 minutes if they showed a nipple.
Yes. Well done, Jackie. What a trooper. I'm so glad I made the deadline this week for interactions. It's been a few weeks. Yes, we haven't had much for you. We haven't had much from you lately, excuse me. So it's a pleasure to hear from you, mate. Amir, I'll see you next Friday at Riff Pro, mate. Going to be a great night. Yeah. Yes, you will, brother. Just over a week, I'll be at Riff Pro's Epic Encounter. Main event is Tomohiro Ishii versus Keith Lee for the Riff Pro title. Fan fucking Dabby Dozy. Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a corker. Speaking of people we haven't heard from in a while, at I Love Clee 216. Yay! I had to damn near force him to fucking send his interactions this week. SmackDown 5/1. Already this show is more organized than Raw within the first 5 minutes. No. You got The Miz, Jeff Hardy, Shelton Benjamin and Randy Orton in the ring together. There's the top of your mid-card. Then we get a nice backstage segment between The Bar and New Day. The Usos are tied up with Bludgeon Brothers, so there are your main tag team feuds. Lana is back, and where she belongs, in my opinion, with Rusev, as much as I love English with Rusev. Simple and organized. Fire Big Cass right now. Get him off my television. Yes. I literally never want to see him again. He is truly awful.
Fucking love it. I love you, Arthur Doom. I'll buy you a gun for that. That was fucking great.
I'll buy you a gun. That's what you Republicans like. Guns and homophobia. I'll buy you some homophobia for Christmas. Sorry, mate. Sorry. Nakamura as a heel is so much better. He's opportunistic, violent, menacing. All things a good heel should be. This is far more interesting. As much as I despise just sticking most of the women in a six-woman tag match, it was a pretty fun match. No, it wasn't. Full of close calls and an exciting finish. Asuka closed the match, but Charlotte closed the show. She's every bit the main eventer that any of the men are, score, and has become a bona fide star in WWE. Food for thought, we talk often, especially right now, about who the face of the company is or should be. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, etc. Why not Charlotte Flair, just the four? I would be all for Charlotte Flair.
Completely agree.
I could not agree more. I would love to see Charlotte Flair up front on all the posters. I think she does has a lot of infinite marketing. More scope and interest.
She does a lot of TV interviews. She probably does more TV interviews than Roman Reigns. Like local TV interviews when she's promoting SmackDown or in town. On the local news, it's Charlotte Flair that's out there doing that. I've got no issue with her being the face of the company. I completely agree with Amir. I've been saying it for a long time. She is definitely up there with AJ Styles as the best in the company. There's no reason. I completely agree with you. It's a great point why she cannot be the face, because she's a damn sight more over than half the names you just reeled off in the men's division.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's more over than AJ Styles, I think.
I think she is, actually, yeah. I think she gets far more of a pop. A lot of that might have to do with, you know, what they're doing with AJ Styles and being in a kind of average to middle-of-the-road rivalry, which, you know, doesn't have much to it other than ball flipping. But, you know, the reality is that Charlotte is, like, you know, I mean, what more can I say, really? She is every bit the star that she deserves to be. And she carries her name as well, and there's a lot of motivation for her to keep going because of it.
Definitely. To dedicate a whole podcast to Charlotte.
Sam Oates on the Facebook. Don't forget, guys, if you don't have a Twitter, you are welcome to send in your SmackDown, Raw, 205 Live, or NXT interactions via Facebook. You can follow that page, like and follow it. You can also send them in via email, thesmartplugpodcast@outlook.com. There are numerous avenues. Feel free to send them in however way you please. Miz is trying his hardest to build this fight with Rollins solo and also the Hardy Orton match. MVP right there. Don't put him in a purple Power Ranger costume, though. Hey, I like that. Also, it's crimson. Fuck you. I don't mind the pay-per-views being dual brand, but don't make the matches. This just doesn't work. We need interaction in a few, not promos to a camera a day apart. And also, with Jeff Randy being on the same brand, there is less than zero chance of Miz being Seth. Yeah, we already know. Like, that's a pointless match. That is utterly pointless.
Garbage.
It does work. Also, Samoa Joe, if he loses to Roman Reigns, that's not a good thing either, because he's literally not had a match on SmackDown yet. So are we going to send him in to SmackDown with a whopping great loss to the faux face of the company?
Yeah. And have him going and saying, I could lose to Roman Reigns, who's not good enough to be the champion on Raw, but I'm coming straight for AJ Styles, the champion of SmackDown. Like, it doesn't say much, does it, to do that? So I think Joe might go over for that reason. I think Reigns needs a couple of losses, to be honest.
I actually forgot that Randy won a rematch for the title while Jinder had it, because since then Jeff won it and had a rematch with Jinder at the Saudi show. But still, Randy's rematch against Jinder is valid against Jeff one pay-per-view later. Can you not see how unnecessarily convoluted that is, WWE? How much you have ruined the continuity of your product because of that show? Have that show there if you really must, but don't pause the current stories. Make a different set of storylines for it, then come back 3 weeks later and expect us to remember or care about the original plot. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's
fair.
True.
Very fair. However, the tag match here was actually the best Randy match there has been for a long time, but I would have been more shocked if Randy didn't RKO Jeff at the end. It's not out of nowhere if he does it every single time. It's just predictable and boring.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Well, our Iconics and Carmelo promo was trash, wasn't it? Doesn't deserve any more said about it. Yup.
I didn't hate it.
I did.
I didn't. I
hate
just
this new gimmick of, oh, look, I'm doing impressions, but I use the same
voice. I agree with that. Off. That's got no longevity to it at all. They need to come up. That's fine if you're going to come up with that and do that a couple of times. That's fine. But they're going to have to come up with something new.
Yeah, if I like, see they, that they next week, just rely I am literally going to explode with rage. I am not going to fucking die.
I like
that.
The fact that they're just annoying heels. I've got no problem with that. I think they're good annoying heels as a duo. But as I say, they've just got... I think they're going to be completely lost when they get split up. And they will get split up. Everyone gets split up in the WWE. They will not stay together.
Can we have Big E just ordering himself in the background of every promo? Now, not even ones that involve the new... That was creepy but funny.
That was
rubbing his shiny pecs in the background in other people's interviews and parts that you know are going to be shit because this will make it infinitely more entertaining. It was
so good.
Just weird. Some people on Twitter suggested it was syrup, but I'm pretty sure it was just oil.
Yeah. I it would be incredible if that was a bit of like...
Yeah.
Golden
walking
syrup
around the rest of the day, smelling
maple.
Of golden syrup. Maple.
They're in Canada. It's got to be maple syrup in Canada, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, that's spot on. Great example would be this next abomination. Sorry, I mean steaming pile of horseshit. Thankfully, Sky went to ad break during Ice Age Sid's entrance, which is worth my subscription fee alone. I hope it goes to ad break during his entrance every single time, and his promos and his matches, and if he's on TV at all. This was the kind of segment where if somebody walks in on you watching it, you'd be less embarrassed if you changed the channel to Babe Station and pulled your pants down. Fucking horrendous.
That's outstanding work.
That's now two for one on listener interactions towards Steve's argument. Yeah, Sam Oates comes up with some utter crackers, doesn't he? I really do enjoy his interactions. He's we got a challenger with Arthur Doom now for best interactions. New Day and the bar matches are enjoyable. Put the Ozos in there. That could be ENC, Hardy's, Dudley's levels of tag team triple threat matches. The closest we would get anyway. Or just do this for the Usos because they are dying on their asses against the Bludgeon Brothers, not helped by having neither team on there today, not even a mention of your tag team champions. What the hell?
Yeah, I think you will see Sanity. I mean, I'm assuming they're probably going to come straight in against Bludgeon Brothers. Either that or just come in and beat down the Usos. I think it's one of those two they're going to come in and do. I would love Usos, Bar and New Day doing carny shit like... TLC pay-per-view and stuff like that, an Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Yeah, I'm all for three-way tag rivalries. Yes, please. Mm. And then add in a second tag rivalry. What?
Happy the women closed the show, even if it was probably just because WWE felt guilty about how they fucked over an entire division for chic money. Wow, is there issues with Iconics and Carmella? First interaction Carmella had with Charlotte, and in this match, and she fucked it. Charlotte made it work, but how is she fucking up this much? That's three in a row now. She was, okay, the rest of the match, infinitely better than... the other two on her team, but Jesus. And when Billy Kay was holding Charlotte and Peyton Royce was kicking her, I've been closer to kicking Charlotte than that, and I've never been in the same room as her.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. It was a lot of mistakes on their end. I watched this match twice because I realised something the first time and had to make sure I was correct. The only actual wrestling move on the part of the Iconics and Carmella was the Hurricane Runner from Carmella to Charlotte off to Zorro. That's what I said. That's exactly what I said. The rest of it was just garbage and fucking headrests.
It's headlocks, it's rest holds.
Yeah. That was it. All that, the rest of the match was from them, was all of that, the rest of the match from, whatever that means, the rest of the match from them was rest holds, strikes, kicks, and air pulls, plus some roll-up attempts. Not one impactful move. Mm. That is abysmal. That's borderline worse than Miss Kitty Terry Runnels' Attitude Era Diva levels. The constant banshee screams only goes to enforce the Diva moniker for these three. You have three of the best women wrestlers in the world, and that's what they have to work with. Literally shaking my head in disappointment. That's exactly that's my true. Take of this entire division and that match especially.
The Cat and Terry Runnels, you did used to try and do like a DDT or a neck breaker, and all right, it would look absolute shit because it was them doing it and it was so slow because they didn't really know what they were doing. But at least they tried to do some wrestling moves. There was an effort there. These are women who, in theory, should be very capable of doing wrestling moves. They've been in fucking WWE's Performance Center for however long, being trained by, you know, top ex-pros. And they're not putting them out there when they're getting TV time. If I'm Naomi sitting at home and I'm seeing those three out there getting the TV time while I'm sitting at home, I'd be fucking furious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely spot on. P.S. If you guys are ever down slash up here for a weekend, see Ray, I'd love to go out for a pint with yous. And I haven't seen Ray in an amount of time I don't want to think about because I'm ignorantly clinging onto my ailing youth with both hands. I've got the next couple of weeks off. If you can contact Ray because he doesn't want to reply to me, you fucking twat, Ray. Just give me a shout, mate, and we'll sort something out because I've got a couple of weeks off. I'm more than happy to travel up and chill out in Essex for the day. Especially, we'll get Nick Payne out as well. We'll make a fucking jaunt of it and have a fucking Whopper podcast for a laugh or something around the laptop. Seems like a good crack. But that's pretty much it for interactions. I'll just make sure, just in case, that the usual people... Yeah, no, that was it, actually. We didn't even get anything from Smiley, who's normally bang on the money when it comes to interactions. So, yeah, that's it for interactions. Thank you very much, guys, for sending them in. And as I've said, as always, you can get them in through all avenues. So if you follow us on any medium, please send them in if you've got anything to say about the current WWE product. Anything to add, Stevie, or should we wrap it up?
No, take me home.
Cool. Usual shilling bullshit. Buy a t-shirt. You can check out the links in the podcast. I can't be asked to keep going on about it. Social media links are in there as well, so follow them. But as far as we're concerned, that's pretty much it for Week in the Universe for the week. We might have a 205 Live or NXT review. That depends on whether Dexter Critchman can get his fat ass out of bed. Failing that, I might just replace him with Kyle for the week because I know Kyle watches NXT religiously. Steve, thank you very much for joining us for Week in the Universe, brother.
Thank you for having me, man.
Absolutely my pleasure, mate. From myself and Steve, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you very soon for another podcast from the Smart Pod Galaxy.